I'm Rob Downey. I'm a family practice MD. I'm board certified. I'm also a functional medicine doctor, so I'm certified through the Institute for Functional Medicine. I've been an attending physician for 20 years, over half of that time in Alaska. I've been doing functional medicine for 15 years. I was the infection control doctor at South Peninsula Hospital, where I'm employed for approximately 3 years. And today I'm speaking as a family practice doctor and functional medicine doctor who's got a lot of training and experience with COVID now and post-COVID syndrome. And even though I'm employed by South Peninsula Hospital, I'm only speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for the hospital.
And of course, I'm not asking you to reveal anything that it would be unethical for you to reveal, but I do want to get a conversation started about people in this community with long-term effects of COVID. Are you treating patients that are experiencing that, have had COVID and now are dealing with problems as a result?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been clear for many, many months that there are people after COVID who don't get back to themselves. Thankfully, it's recognized by the conventional medical community. So it's out there that there are people who have heart trouble or brain fog or a cough that never resolves, any host of a constellation of findings that don't get back to normal. And many of those individuals feel very debilitated, fatigue and brain fog or ongoing heart issues being pretty classic for post-COVID. So the conventional medical community is saying this post-COVID syndrome or long COVID is being described as a constellation of findings that can't be explained by anything else. And in the functional medicine community, we're saying, well, functional medicine does so much work around having an immune system that can be easily tipped over before they get COVID. We're able to look at the data and help people get their immune system back in balance via primarily lifestyle and supplementation, correcting those imbalances that allowed them to tip over. And so Institute for Functional Medicine is saying, hey, let's mitigate this. It's not being presented as cure, or that's not what I do in my practice, but we're saying let's make people resistant to getting COVID, resilient when they have it, and let's have them have a good recovery. So as these folks showed up to me, they didn't hear about me as a doc doing post-COVID treatment. I think all of them, Kathleen, have been saying, by the way, I had COVID and I never got better. In the last month or two, some of them have said, oh, I did hear that you're doing this. I'm specifically showing up because now my heart's doing a funny rhythm, or I can't think straight, or I haven't got my energy back. I've seen these patients in my practice improve. Are all of them 100% better? No. One of them is nearly 100% better over about 6 months. Many of them are turning it around. And we know some of the people with post-COVID in general are feeling stuck. So I would say I'm seeing in my practice what is being reported in the functional medicine community, which is we're probably having better outcomes adding functional medicine than just letting it ride.
I want to know if you are developing or are part of any group of people compiling information about long COVID. Are there enough commonalities between people to say, yes, these are the things that we recommend that work?
Thankfully so. There's really good data coming out of the conventional medical community. When you and I were getting ready to have this conversation, we talked about how IFM is collating all of this data, and I hope over the course of today's conversation we connect people to the IFM website, because the fact that half of it is built for people just seeking information. As a beneficiary of all of this collated data, I have access through Institute for Functional Medicine of that, plus all of the observations made by the Institute for Functional Medicine faculty. So the type of inflammation that's generated by COVID tends to be combated by curcumin, which comes from turmeric, and the type of oxidative stress that's generated by SARS-CoV-2/COVID-19 tends to respond well to an antioxidant called resveratrol. So I'll show folks this protocol saying these are the supplements that are recommended to to mitigate the risk of contracting COVID, these are the supplements that are recommended to have a less severe case if you're known to have COVID right now. And these are the supplements that are recommended in the wake to mitigate or avoid or diminish post-COVID syndrome. And we're usually putting together a combination of those things. Lifestyle makes a difference, and food and rest and stress management and movement and social connection. Those are the primary firewalls against getting it, having a severe course, or having post-COVID syndrome is having good lifestyle practices in place.
Do you personally contribute data to the Institute for Functional Medicine?
I get from IFM right now. I don't give. It's really super, super hard work for those folks to collate things, and anecdotes aren't terribly helpful to them. So Institute for Functional Medicine is part of studies that are going on right now. And if people go to ifm.org/COVID-19, they can see what collaborative projects are happening right now. But I just mine that information that they pull together and the work that they do to inform my work as a physician so that I'm up to date. We know we're going to be hearing from more and more people. I never got better. I want to avoid this. I'm traveling to a part of the world that's still endemic. What do I do? So we're just using this stuff on the fly in real time.
So do I understand that Institute for Functional Medicine, are they primarily using data that has been presented and peer-reviewed by academics, or is it coming from the states?
Well, all of the above. Okay. So I think the key thing to know there is that Institute for Functional Medicine, because part of what it's certifying people in is what's been historically referred to as natural or holistic or integrative medicine, sometimes an assumption is made, well, maybe the quality of the data isn't the same as what a conventional MD uses, and that's not the case for the Institute for Functional Medicine. The only data that's allowed in is peer-reviewed scientific journals, reports from government agencies. It's either peer-reviewed or equivalent, meaning it was collected in a way that's essentially vetted. So Centers for Disease Control, World Health Organization. Lauren talks a lot about what's happening with the state of Alaska public health system. So if there's a properly collected study in the state of Alaska that's something that a public health nurse would use, that often be the kind of thing that would be grist for the mill for IFM to comment on trends. But Institute for Functional Medicine also pays really close attention to small studies. So there'll also be laboratory studies saying, oh, this last genetic sequencing of this COVID-19 variant has this change in how it's sequenced, which has this implication for which botanical or nutraceutical supplement can be used for it. So it's pretty mind-blowing how the whole thing fits together.
What sources, I know you said World Health Organization and the CDC, I think you've mentioned the New England Journal of Medicine. What sources should, say, someone like me be looking for? And specifically about a lot of the questions we get on the COVID brief on Thursdays is about the safety of vaccines. And so I was wondering, like, where do you look for that information? And also about data on people who have long-term effects of COVID-19.
I'm glad you asked me. So even though the numbers of answers I'm going to share are relatively few, I think the value is that these are incredibly potent resources. And so ifm.org/COVID-19, it's got a prevention and treatment page, and it's divided into patients and practitioners. And so the very first thing is nutraceuticals and botanicals. And this gives people a safe list of things they could undertake on their own and or discuss with their medical provider. There's a resilience and lifestyle tab with two handouts for patients on how sleep can help, how to manage stress. And then there are two patient tabs under vaccines for how the vaccines work, which ones are on hold, which ones are underway. And so I think of this site as a clearinghouse for anything and everything that matters for a patient. And then a couple more sources, CDC, Centers for Disease Control, has excellent resources for patients. The third one is something people might be interested to know about. Unfortunately, they can't access it unless they're a medical provider. Sometimes it's just cool for people to know what their doctor's doing or their medical provider is doing. We have access at South Peninsula Hospital to a resource called UpToDate. So the world's best clinicians and scientists are paid to bring all of what matters about a topic into one place. So UpToDate pays these experts. They create a monograph or essentially an essay around a topic. It's updated continuously. So to prepare for today's discussion, I was able to go to UpToDate yesterday and look at all the best science in the world and where it stood as of June 22nd. I just think about how stressful it is for people to say, where can I get good information that I really trust? Because this is high stakes. This is me and my family's well-being.
And there's so much misinformation out there.
I've committed my professional life to this and a good part of my personal life to this. There couldn't possibly be more at stake because I'm paid to help people with their well-being and make decisions that have life or death implications. And Institute for Functional Medicine is a nonprofit. They've been around for 30 years. They have loved ones and families and people that they take care of. And there's a whole bunch of natural medicine people who are part of Institute for Functional Medicine who, for example, always are asking themselves, okay, we're creating immunity with immunizations by stressing the immune system. That's how immunizations work. It presents the immune system with a sort of abbreviated version of the enemy, as it were, and teaches the immune system how to recognize that. And so now a person could go to the Institute for Functional Medicine website who has autoimmunity in the form of lupus, which is a very severe autoimmune disease, and they could see on one of these tabs that if people have unmanaged severe autoimmune conditions, those individuals are advised to think about whether to wait on getting vaccinated until they feel that their autoimmunity is managed by working with a rheumatologist or undertaking other measures. So that's just one of hundreds and hundreds of things people can do. If people are wondering, well, gee, none of these vaccines were tested in pregnant women, but I hear, you know, that pregnant women are getting the vaccine. How's that working? They can go drill all the way down to the New England Journal article that reviewed the adverse events, of which there were very few, and see that what happened is they didn't test the vaccine on pregnant patients for ethical reasons. The safety emerged to the point where medical providers were recommending to a lot of pregnant women, hey, I think that the benefits exceed the risks.
That and recommendation so, still stands, as far as I understand. I'll check with Nurse Lauren, too.
And then they could learn that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine are an mRNA vaccine and the Johnson & Johnson is a different type of vaccine. And that's why this negative charge that's on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is ever so subtle, something about the charge on it may affect platelets in a certain way that can wreak havoc with a tiny subset of individuals. They can see, again, for purposes of transparency, we know now that some people who receive immunization end up with inflammation of the heart called myocarditis or pericarditis. And so I think it's also a relief to people who can be worried that medical organizations or the government, you know, they want to know that the transparency is there when they see that it's right there on the IFM website that some people have been immunized. That's meant to trigger the immune system to protect that person, but something about that very rare individual, it triggers a cascade of inflammation, which mimics COVID-19. Some of those folks then develop heart troubles, and we now have data that some of those people have had it happen in the vaccine. We're talking like tiny incidence numbers. Again, it's there. Somebody can go look at it, and they can say, well, my mom or my grandfather had a inflammation of the heart, and that's just something that I would never want to risk. And so that could be a game changer for somebody. So I think it's that sense of transparency.
Is the information on the website sourced? Can you track it? Can you follow it back
Yes.
to where it comes from?
All significant content from IFM is cited. When I was looking through a lot of this yesterday, it was New England Journal of Medicine, Lancet, Journal of American Medical Association. It's a chance for people to hear out of the hundreds or thousands of places we could get information. Not all information is created equal, and there's a lot at stake.
Dr. Rob, I want to thank you for your time.
Well, it's a privilege to be, you know, entrusted by KBBI to hopefully be a helpful voice on the radio that may be of benefit or service, and so that means a lot to me.
Dr. Rob Downey, thanks so much for saying yes. And thanks to also Nurse Lauren Carroll, who stayed on the line. Thanks, Nurse Lauren. I wanted to get your take on long-term COVID, on treatment going forward, what the future looks like. Do you have something to add on that?
Oh, yeah, sure thing. You know, first of all, I'm just thankful to hear Rob on the line again. He's so great at that stuff. But yeah, I think in terms of long COVID, over the next several months, we'll see a shift in conversations and the work that we're doing. Because not only the impacts of COVID, which is long COVID, which is largely still not understood very well, we'll also see that folks that weren't directly impacted by the virus due to social exclusion, you know, losing their job or inability to access preventive care, all that stuff impacts the health and wellness of us as individuals and families, but also the entire state. So I think, you know, Rob's kind of setting the stage there perfectly to start shifting these conversations as we look at getting out of the pandemic and preparing for, unfortunately, the next.
Thanks, Nurse Lauren. And I did get a question this coming week or a comment this week wondering about challenging the idea that vaccines are safe for pregnant women. And Dr. Downey and I talked a little bit about that, but I also want to hear from you as a representative of the State Public Health Center.
Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of women, pregnant women in the U.S. who have had all the vaccines. And thankfully, it's very clear that vaccines are not only incredibly safe for pregnant women, but as a protective factor for the kiddo that's about to enter the world. So thankful for that.
Okay. Thanks, Nurse Lauren. I appreciate you staying long this time. Last call for comments. Thank you and welcome back.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the opportunity, Anna. See you around, Kathleen.
Okay, bye-bye. That is Nurse Lauren Carroll from the Homer Public Health Center and the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Thanks also to Dr. Rob Downey from the South Peninsula Hospital Functional Medicine Clinic, and Jenny Carroll, Information Officer for the City of Homer. I am Kathleen Gustafson, and this has been the regular Thursday COVID Brief.